Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to the Human Solution International. News from the front lines, where we present to you the voices from right from the war. We always do as much as we can to bring the news to you straight from what's happening out there in the world. And I'd like to tell everybody and thank everybody for listening, because we have a great show lined up for you. But first, I must tell you that the news from the front lines is presented to you and made possible by volunteers from the Human Solution International's media team. I am your host, and I am the Vice President of Human Solution, Kristen Flohr, and my co-host is Eugene Fisher. And Eugene Fisher is extra special because he is one of our executive board members. He's on our board of directors. He's also one of our POWs and one of our heroes right from the front lines, as he served about 26 years in prison for our plan. And you will meet Eugene in just a few moments. Danielle Vitale O'Brien, she is somebody who's helping us today and behind the scenes, and so is Karen Baker. So I want to just thank everybody, and Mike Harris and Mindy Griffith and Becca Nichols, everybody for making the show possible today and for presenting you and helping present to you the news right from the front lines. So today we have an interesting show coming up. We're going to talk we're going to have Eugene on the phone here in a second, but we also have Craig Cecil calling in. Craig Cecil is a man who spent over 13 years in prison and was sentenced. Get into those things first. But first and foremost, we must get started is to remind everybody about our emergency call to action, our solidarity alert that we launched for the Kettle Falls family. The Kettle Falls family is a very unique family to our movement in the way that they're all standing together and fighting the end of prohibition by taking their case, their federal case, where they were facing up to, I think it was over 60 years in prison. They wouldn't allow state laws in their prison, in their trial or anything like that. So the jury had no idea that they were caregivers. However, jury nullification helped save them a little bit. They were found not guilty on 4 out of the 5 charges. So now they're faced with one charge that they may not even get any jail time for, because there's no mandatory minimum sentence on it. Or if the judge wants to, they can give them up to 20 years. So the executive board unanimously agreed to launch this call to action in order to get letters to the judge asking everybody to write one that says that they shouldn't go to jail because of this plan. So on our website at www.thsintl.org to find out how you can write your own letter. And if you don't have time to write a letter, can go to our website, or you can go to their website at www.kettlefalls5.com, and you can get a sample letter type of thing that you can just automatically sign on it. So you can submit it that way. And I believe they've gotten over 900 people to sign on it so far. So let's help out the Kettle Falls family and keep them out of prison. So right now I would like to introduce to you guys Eugene Fisher. He's on the line, my co-host. Good morning, Eugene. How are you?
Good morning, Christian. Good morning, listeners. It's so good to be on with you all today on this day. And, Christian, I'd just like to make a footnote to what you said. Christian represents the very best of our organization, and she represents what we're really all about, and that's grassroots. Our organization is any one person or persons doing something. It's a coordinated effort, an effort to help people in court, in cases they're bringing to court. It's an organization that reaches out to help people who are incarcerated over cannabis charges, people who in many cases feel the loneliness of incarceration, and it's a great help to have people like us support them with letter writing, pass some money when we can, and so on. I just like to emphasize that point to our listeners. Please remember, this is your organization. This is our effort to do something. And through this joint effort, it's the thing that Christian always says that the organization stands for. Nobody should go to jail for a plant. The ultimate goal is to reverse entirely the prohibition of cannabis. And this is not the first time that something like this has happened in the United States. We had prohibition of alcohol that went on, and because of grassroots efforts like ours, that was repealed. The Vulture Act was finally thrown away. So with those things, Christian, I'd like to also make this pitch that tell our listeners a little later we're going to tell them about something that's pending in Congress that can help prisoners. I'll speak to it later. It's called the Barbara Amendment, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But I pass you back the ball, Christian.
All right. Well, I want to kind of put, as we get as Craig comes on, I want to ask him this too. But I had an interesting conversation with you, Eugene, before the radio show started. And it's because I went to go visit my dad's partner. And you told me a story, and I told you a story. So I just want to talk about my visit to Chris and then see what you say about it. And then we'll ask Eugene the same, or we'll ask Craig a similar question. But I went to go visit my dad's partner a couple days ago. I'd just gotten off work, and, you know, I figured my work clothes, you know, they would be just fine to be able to allow me to visit them. They're just work clothes, you know, no biggie. So I went out to work and to go visit Chris. They just moved him from a prison camp where they don't search you very much. You just kind of just show them your ID and walk into the cafeteria area and visit. Well, however, he's in more of a secured area. In fact, he's at the SeaTac Federal Bureau of Prisons, which is kind of close to my house. It's where my dad spent a month. My dad suffered attuned to that. But, you know, when I went there, I went there thinking, okay, I'm going to see my dad's partner. And, you know, I pulled into the parking lot, and I immediately had felt quite a bit of pain because I'd been there before to visit my dad, but they wouldn't let me visit him because they said I had something on my record, which wasn't real. I had to prove that wasn't real. But, you know, when I picked him up from there, he was just in bad shape, way worse shape than when he went in. And I brought just some painful memories to me. But I hurried up and I just changed my thoughts and everything. I thought, okay, well, this is different. I'm going to see my guest partner. I get in there, and I watched him reject a couple people, not letting them see because they were wearing metal. And they were arguing, I don't have any metal on, but if you don't pass their test, you know, their metal detector test, when you go through their thing, which is, it's very hard to do, you don't get to visit. Well, the door slammed immediately. As soon as you walked past big metal door, you realized you were in a prison. The door just slammed real tight, and they sent a couple girls through, rejected them, and I went through, and they rejected me. I had a little metal on my zipper on my sweatshirt, and I was wearing a bra that has underwire on it. So you can't have those types of items behind the bar. So I, in fact, and then they said, well, you might not want to wear those pants back in here again because next time we won't allow those pants either. So I said, okay, they're work pants. How bad can they be? But whatever. And I left. So I didn't get to see Chris Williams. And as far as I know, Chris Williams is not happy with this place. He says it's a lot more dangerous than the prison camp. He doesn't get to run. He doesn't get to jog. He doesn't get to go in the sweat lodge anymore. And so that was that. And, Eugene, you told me a story that I didn't like to hear about what happened when your family came to visit you.
Yeah, I'd like to just add this to what you were saying. I want our listeners to understand some things. These things are just common sense and are known, but I want to say them. Number one, prison is separation from society and separation from family. And I want that to sink in for those people listening so they fully understand what that means. It means it puts people in a very lonely situation if you're a prisoner. And a lifeline to your sanity, a lifeline to the things you love, that is your family, is our telephone calls, the mail. Now they let us use emails. That was most of my time in prison, they didn't have the email system. Now they have it. And most of all, what you just said, visits, Christian. They're so important to a prisoner. And on the other side of it, they're important to the family. And families make tremendous efforts to see their loved ones in prison. I've been separated from my family by many, many miles in the prisons that I was sent to originally. The closest I ever got was Coleman, Florida, which was a couple of hours' drive from most of my family. But in most cases, there were airplane rides to be taken and so on. And I was blessed with four loving children, a wife, and most of all, a mother. And my story about what you're saying about clothing, I'm going to make a point of tell you a little story about her, but I want the listeners to understand. While I was in prison, every opportunity I had, there were some days we were in lockdown, I couldn't do it. Some days I was in the hole, in isolation, I couldn't do it. Some days I was be transported to another prison, I couldn't do it. But whenever I could do it, I'd get on and I'd call my mother. Because you can't, there are no incoming calls to prisoners, there are outgoing calls. We can make outgoing calls and we pay for them. We pay for them at a cost much higher than the public pays for the phone calls. I'd call my mother every day and we'd speak for a minute or two just to hear each other's voices. And that was such a great sustenance to me, the love of that lady and her continuing support to me. It didn't matter that I was in prison. I mean, when I say that, it didn't make her look at me as any less of a son or anything else. And she became an old lady, because remember, I did 25 years in prison. She wasn't young when I went into prison. She was in her 70s, but as she visited me in different places, we'd have to go through, and as my kids visited me, they go through this horrendous system that you spoke about, like coming to visit people in prison. And it gets worse as you get to the maximum security prisons where I was at most of my time in prison. And there's the one story I want to tell listeners is, here's this old lady coming in. She's coming in a wheelchair in her latter years to see me. She couldn't hardly walk anymore. And she was a lady. My mother was a lady. And so she cared about her looks. Didn't matter how old she was, she cared about our looks, God bless her. And she wore a wig because her hair wasn't there anymore the way it was as she was a young woman. And they'd make her take a wig off. And I used to, it was so humiliating to her to have to do that and come through. But then we experienced over and over, Christian, the thing you just said. When my daughters come in to see, there'd be problems, like you just said, with brassieres and with clothing. They couldn't wear any khaki clothing, for example, because khaki was one of the colors. And most of my time in prison, we were outfitted in khakis. Now, why they were worried about someone bringing khakis in, it wouldn't help anyone escape prison to bring khakis in. But they had this thing where you couldn't a woman or someone visiting couldn't wear khakis and shorts. They were restricted in shorts, what they could wear and so on. And it gets to the point. Now, the thing you just said, you're visiting prisoners, they're people you feel for deeply, whether it's direct family or visiting a friend like you do with Chris Williams or anyone. You're visiting someone because you care for them. And it's so horrendous in the beginning of that visit that you got to go through this humiliating, I'm talking about the people coming in have to go through this humiliating process of getting processed. You know, my daughters used to say, "Dad, I don't know what to wear." Because
I don't have any clothes that I can wear. I'm stuck too. I don't know. I don't know.
My daughter should tell me.
Everything I have is on their dining list.
They changed the rule. They changed the rules. It depends who was on duty. And they say, you can't wear that clothes you're wearing. And it would put my daughters in tears sometimes just to come in. They'd have to go out and change. And, you know, since they were traveling to see me distances, usually they'd have a suitcase in the car or something, a rental car or whatever. And they'd have to go out and change. They knew the process. They'd have to change clothes till they wore clothes that the processing people felt were adequate to come in. And on the other side of it, you know this, Christian, for the prisoner coming to the visitation room, they have to go through a total strip search, the first thing. And, you know, by the word strip search, you can imagine what it means.
Right.
It means you got to take everything, all of your clothes off as a prisoner. And you got a guard there, and they look at you all over your body and everything else to make sure you're not carrying anything in and leaving the visitation area, of
That's
course.
That's what Chris Williams has to do now.
Taking anything out.
Yep.
Excuse me?
Yep. I said that's what my dad's partner has to do now, too, at this new jail.
Yeah, that's what they – and now they might not do this in the camps. I never got to a camp.
No,
but
I don't think they do in the camp.
In penitentiaries and medium level institutions, you got to do it. And it's a real chore. And then when you're in the visitation room, you're not allowed to touch each other. Now, you tell me, Christian. You come in to visit your dad or someone you care for, and you're going to hold his hand or something, they'll tell you to stop it immediately. You're allowed an initial kiss, as long as it isn't too ardent. You're allowed an initial kiss, and, you know, for a man who has his wife visit or someone, or like in my case, his daughters or his mother visit, there's affection there, you know, but that's the beginning. That's the affection you can have, and then when they leave, they can kiss you goodbye. Other than that, even in some institutions, it even got that way with grandchildren. As I was incarcerated, Christian, my kids had eight children who became my grandchildren who came to visit me. I knew all my grandchildren. Through my incarceration period. That's how I got introduced to them. I wasn't there for any of their births. I wasn't there for any of the marriages of my kids. I wasn't there for the death of my mother. Those were all things that happened. I wasn't there for the death of my mother-in-law and father-in-law, people I loved deeply. And the children even. Some institutions don't even let you, you know, you have a little child come in to visit you, and what are one of the things you do? He'll sit on your lap, right? Or she'll sit on your lap. And some places they say you can't do that even. Even if it's a four-year-old or five-year-old coming to visit their dad, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult.
We have Dr. David Allen, who is an ex-POW. He's also one of our board members on the line. I think I'm going to bring him on and ask him if he had any issues when he had any people come visit him when he was in prison too, okay? Hold on.
Yes, let's bring him on. Let's bring Dr. Allen on.
Hi, Dr. Allen, are you there? Dr. Allen? Are you there, Doctor?
Yeah.
Are you there, Dr. Allen? Dr. Allen? Oh, wait, I think he is. I think I heard him. Dr. Allen, was that you?
I got you. Sorry, I had the speaker muted.
Oh, hi, Dr. Allen. Me and Eugene were just talking about like getting visits in prison, and I know you were in prison, so I thought we'd bring you on and talk about if you had any visitors that couldn't be visited or any stories to tell us about. When you were in prison.
About visitation.
And Yeah.
Sure. They just search you after you come out of seeing somebody. They at the prison I was at, they allowed you to visit somebody for like 45 minutes one time every twice a month or something. And they would let you out there. We could actually meet across a table without a window between us. And you could buy snacks there. They had vending machines. And the food they had there was so much better than the prison food. It was unbelievable. So people really liked to go to visitations and be able to eat a little bit of food while they were there. And of course, they strip search you when you leave and make sure there's no contraband and things. But it's very humiliating, actually. And sometimes they abuse the people who visit, because if they don't like the prisoner, they'll abuse the people who visit them.
I went to go visit my daughter yesterday.
Good morning.
This is Eugene. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Eugene. How are you doing, sir? I'm so proud of you guys, you and Kristen, taking over the radio show and doing all this hard work for prisoners. And this is what it's all about.
Thank
prison,
you.
Prison tries to isolate you and remove all hope that you'll ever get out of prison. And they try to they do their best to limit communication by limiting email or limiting mail. I never had any access to email. I understand that some prisoners do have access to email. But they limit phone conversations and mail and visits. And the less communication prisoners have with the outside, the less chances there are for prisoners to be freed. So prisons know that communication with the outside world means a possible path to freedom. And what they want to do is they want to keep prisoners in as long as possible without any appeals or any other kind of legal maneuvers that would deny the prison's inmates. Because they charge, in Mississippi, they charge $46 a day for housing an inmate. And a lot of their tricks are aimed at preventing people from leaving the facility because they get $45 a day. So it's like a hotel with really bad room service.
Yeah, Dr. Allen, I appreciate your comments. I was making the same comments a few minutes before you came on the line about the isolation and the importance of visitation. And you're absolutely right about the system is a malevolent system. It's an evil system designed for job security for those people involved in keeping people in prison. And
that's exactly right.
The idea of incarceration at some point was to protect society from people who could do harm to fellow members of the society and to society itself. And most of us would agree those are noble aims. We don't want someone out there who is a killer or a rapist or a child molester. But then we come down to people like yourself and myself and so many of the people we've known who've gone to prison for marijuana charges. Have no violence in their lives. The whole significance of prison is lost, and it doesn't improve society one bit by doing what we're doing. The war on drugs is a total and utter failure, and of course, a component of that is, as you know so well, Dr. Allen, is this war on marijuana, on cannabis. That is so absurd, and classifying it among the most dangerous of drugs when we all know it isn't. But the point you made was so poignant. You were incarcerated in Mississippi, and yet you you were from the Pacific Coast, weren't you? You were from the California area.
Yeah, but well, see, that you don't know my whole story. I was charged with by Mississippi people, not federal people, and they put me in a prison pretrial. See, I was in prison pretrial, and it's supposed to be jail, but really the prison that they had, one half of the prison was for convicted inmates, and the other half of the prison was for pretrial detainees, they call it. And what happens is the prison system can control communication for people convicted of crimes, but they really aren't allowed legally to control communication from people that are not convicted yet, so pretrial detainees, they call them. And they have to separate the two groups. They can't have convicted of crimes mixed in cells with people that are in pretrial because it always causes trouble. But I forgot where I was going with this, but prison is nothing more than a business, and the whole prison industry would completely collapse if they didn't have marijuana crimes to fill the cells. And so This is a fight for life for the correctional institutions. They want to keep alive, and the only way they can keep going the way they are, the only way they can afford to pay all the guards that they have, is to continue this war on marijuana. And if they just legalize marijuana, all the other drugs would be like, there would be no reason to have the DEA if marijuana was legalized. Heroin and cocaine and speed are not that big. They're big problems, but they're not that big of a problem to justify the expense of a DEA. And so the DEA knows that they're fighting for their life. And something interesting happened to me a couple weeks ago. There's a marijuana hater named Bishop Ron Allen, and he has another marijuana hater called Linda Taylor, who they apparently listen to this radio show. Okay, and the reason I know that is because I was on Facebook and they were giving me some grief, and I was giving some grief back, and they mentioned that I had talked on the Human Solution radio show, and they gave me a link to where my voice was recorded on this show. And so what this means is that the DEA and other marijuana haters are listening to this show. And so if you're listening, I want to say, fuck you, motherfuckers. You ruined my family. You hurt me really bad. And you did all of this on the basis of keeping your jobs alive and stealing money from the public. And you guys are evil. And I hope you're listening now to what I'm saying.
And they ruined Dr. Allen's career.
You ruined my career. You took my family. My family's still estranged from me. And you took everything in my life from me. And I didn't do anything to hurt you. You did this all on unjustified, righteous stuff. And so if you're listening, I just want to tell you people how horrible you people are. Thank you.
Dr. Allen.
I agree with you, Dr. Allen.
I've run estimates. I think the numbers are over 750,000 arrests every year for marijuana crimes, accused marijuana crimes.
At one time, it was higher than that, though. It reached up to 950,000 people about 2 years ago they arrested for marijuana crimes. Almost
you're
a million
probably
people.
Right that because of some of the states that have worked to legalize medical marijuana and even recreational, it's decreased somewhat. But again, it probably our federal system, at least our federal system, and county systems and state systems also, would be decreased by about 50% if we had a 100% legalization of marijuana, if we eliminated prohibition.
And what people don't understand is even if you don't use marijuana, these laws are used against you and will hurt you. These laws will hurt you because they will give people a reason to come in your car and search you, marijuana crimes are only an excuse for the government to search you at any moment and take your rights away. I mean, you shouldn't be able to be searched for no reason. They have to have a reason to search you. And marijuana is an excuse to obliviate that reason.
You're talking about...
Well, I always say that marijuana is safer than our laws. It's always safer than our laws. Like, our marijuana laws hurt us way more than our plants do.
We're talking... Well, you're talking about something that's very close to me because that's part of the overall picture of forfeitures. And one of the reasons I was able to get out of prison after 25 years, as I told the listeners in prior programs, was because I showed that the U.S. government had improperly confiscated and run a asset of me and my co-defendants called the Bicycle Club. And in the process of doing it, they raked in hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. And the Marshal Service itself ran this gambling casino, this Bicycle Club, which was a legal bicycle gambling casino in outside of L.A., Los Angeles, California. And it's just an example of the lucrativeness of the whole thing for the people involved in the policing side of this war on drugs and war on marijuana.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct.
And the police are nothing more than the sheriffs of Nottingham's of old. And what they do is they go around and they use laws to steal money and property from people. And one of the big problems with marijuana is there's a property seizure law that if you're accused of any crime that they can link to drug sales, then that gives them the right to seize your property before you even go to court. So what this means is it makes police the judge and jury in a squad car out on the street. And our constitutional founders never meant for the police to be the judges on the street. And so the seizure laws are almost worse than the marijuana laws because the seizure laws the seizure laws give motivation for police to hunt you. So, for instance, in my case, there was the sheriff, Mike Byrd, started a drug task force. And here's how these things start. So the sheriff decides he wants to start a drug task force business, and there's government funding for this business. And what they do is they start a business, they hire a lawyer, they give the business a name, Jackson County Drug Task Force, okay? And they hire a guy to head it off, and then they get federal money for employees, and they allow them to hire so many police officers, but the money doesn't pay for equipment or for gas. And so what they have to do is they have to go around and hunt the public to sustain themselves. And the seizure laws allow police the ability to seize property before you even go to court, before there's even a guilty verdict. So the police claiming that you're guilty is all they need to seize that property. You don't have a right. Your property is deemed guilty before you even have a chance to explain. So regardless of what the circumstances are, the police seize your property. And so what people don't understand is these seizure laws make the police evil. And so here's my suggestion to solve the police state. I believe that every police person that carries a weapon should have private insurance. And what would happen is this. Since police don't police themselves and the courts don't police themselves, if you had an insurance policy and if a cop shot somebody, there would be an investigation. It wouldn't be a police investigation. It would be an insurance investigation. And since what happens is if you shoot somebody and there's an insurance claim, and here's what happened to me. The drug task force attacked me and my family. They made all kinds of crazy claims. And what happened was, after it was all over, my lawyer, my criminal lawyer, and that's a double entendre, My criminal lawyer filed a $551 million lawsuit against the sheriff and a bunch of people. And that had the effect of this. These businesses have business insurance. Okay, they got you. And so when the company, so whenever you notify somebody they got a lawsuit, what happens is they have to notify by the insurance policy says, if you get a lawsuit, you got to notify us. Otherwise, we don't carry your insurance. So they have to call the insurance company and say, oh, we got a lawsuit. Well, what happened was, after I filed my lawsuit, there was a bunch of other lawsuits filed against the sheriff because they knew they had him running. And what happened was,
I don't want to interrupt you guys, but I got Craig Cecil calling on the line. So hold on, I'm going to answer him, and then we'll be back to you in a second, Dr. Allen.
Don't go away, Dr. Allen. We'll be back with you in about 10 or 15 minutes. Thank you. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Craig. How are you doing today?
Good, Kristen. How's things out on the West Coast?
Oh, I don't know. I went to go visit my dad's partner a couple days ago, and he's in federal prison, and they wouldn't let me because I had too much metal on. Apparently, my bra and my sweatshirt had some metal in it. So we've been talking today on the show, Eugene and I, with other guests about metal and what visits are like. In federal prison and in any prison, but that's about it. That's about it going on over here. How are you doing?
Good, good. And you know what? Visitors coming in for visits are a perpetual problem. Especially the younger, prettier women seem to have the problem. Depending on who allows them in, their clothes are too tight, they're too loose, they're always too something.
Right.
My daughter has to change clothes sometimes four or five times before they allow her in.
Wow.
Good morning, Craig. This is Eugene.
Good morning, Jean. That's
how,
my poor
how
daughter
are you doing?
Used to it. Now she. Oh, I'm getting by here. We've been locked down all morning, so it's kind of nice to be out in the day room today.
Oh, I know that feeling of lockdown, Yeah, when you mentioned daughters, I had two of them, Craig, that kept visiting me in prison. And they knew the routine. They used to be so frustrated because it'd be arbitrary that as the person doing the clearance for them to come in about what they could or couldn't wear. And they used to get so frustrated. They'd carry a suitcase with them because they used to travel distances to see me, and they'd have changes of clothes. And sometimes, like you say, they'd have to change their clothes three or four times just to get in to see me.
Oh, and the crazy part is the clothes that were good the day before, they can't wear the next day, and it's real arbitrary.
Then I need to talk to
you
guys' daughters. I need to meet your guys' daughters, because I have to figure out what I can wear and what I can't wear. I don't think there's anything in my wardrobe that is, everything in my wardrobe is on their list of stuff not to wear. And that's, I mean, you can't wear anything other than, I think, two things, but I'm still confused about that.
If you met my daughter,
I remember
just like
one
if you met Craig, they tell you the same thing. They were totally frustrated in trying to visit all the time. And they talk about
her clothes were too tight. She went and put on yoga clothes. Those were too loose. Then they just go down the list. Sometimes it takes her a couple of hours just to get past the clothes screening.
As I spent my time in prison, my mother got increasingly older, and she was finally in a wheelchair, and she wore a wig because she was a lady. She looked good when she came in, and she'd have to take that wig off and take the bobby pins out and everything every time she came in. They would not every time. There were sometimes there were decent guards that would take pity on an older lady coming in to see her son. But it was very humiliating.
But, I mean, that's at the – Kristen, you're seeing just a bit of an agency that has no outside oversight at all.
Right.
That's why the people generally, a lot of the employees just run amok because there's nobody to hold them to any sort of rules or anything.
Right.
You know, that they're not scrutinized by inspections or by oversight or anything. They just do what they do.
Why were you on lockdown?
I'm not sure. We usually know why. There wasn't any fight that I know of or anything. But sometimes this is a complex that has a prison camp, a penitentiary, and a medium. Now, I'm in the medium, which was formerly a penitentiary, but now it's a medium custody. But sometimes if they have, like, a big gang war at the USP or something, we get locked in our cells over that also. So it could be that, and we're expecting that Boston bomber to be here soon. So
okay.
They'll probably...
So you're in prison with a bomber?
Yeah, the guy that killed all those people at the Boston Marathon, he'll be coming here.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, this is where death row is for federal inmates.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay, so maybe I should...
It's the only place in the prison. Christian, it's the only place in the federal prisons that has the death row.
Wow.
Yeah, they also execute him here. This is where Timothy McVeigh was executed and the others, yeah.
Wow.
They haven't executed anybody since I've been here, but from what I understand, that they lock everybody in their cells for that, too. So
the whole prison knows what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. But that's an eerie feeling.
I suppose. I haven't been through it yet, to tell you the truth, and I'm not looking forward to it.
Huh.
I just can't believe that, you know, that these people assume they have...
This call is from a federal prison.
...to kill somebody, you know, especially based on our justice system. I'm from Illinois, where 39 people that were on death row ended up not being guilty and walk free. So that's kind of scary. Because how good is our justice system if they couldn't determine if they had even committed the crime that deserved death? Yeah. I think our justice system needs an overhaul.
Well, guess what, Craig? There's some good news. The Human Solutions International, you know, we always do advocating when we go to, like, Hemp Fest and events, little events like marijuana community events. But one of our goals is to get out into the mainstream and affect people that don't already know about our plant, that don't even know we have people in jail for our plant. And the up here in Washington, we have one of our members who got us into it. It's an amphitheater, right? We have an amphitheater. So we're going to be able to go to all the concerts. And they've got big names coming up this summer, over and over all summer. So we're going to be able to deliver the news of what's going on in our world, in our community here, to people who know nothing about it. So we're the first concert expecting 30,000 people at. So we're hoping to make a big change in the world too. So we're really excited to be able to be out and be able to talk to these guys, because we're a nonprofit 501c3, so they've given us a free table at their concerts for the whole entire summer. So
Fantastic. Is that in Washington, where the state law allows recreational marijuana? Or?
Yes, it's in Washington. So we'll be able to show the truth of what's really going on out there in a major way, I hope. So we're really excited to be able to take it to the next level. And hopefully more people know about this, and it'll end sooner than later, because we are making a huge effort out here to get people to be aware.
Now, one thing I experience even in prison here, and I'll bet Gene experienced that also, is we kind of gain some notoriety in the prison just by the fact that we have life for marijuana. Most prisoners don't realize you can get life for marijuana.
Yeah.
I'm sure Gene went through the same thing.
Yeah.
People point him out. Oh, that's the guy.
the champion in that cause, as you know, Craig, is Beth Curtis, with her campaign to try to educate the public and educate even the president about that there are people serving life sentences for marijuana. But you're absolutely right. People could never get over it, including prisoners, that I was serving a life sentence just like you are for marijuana. People couldn't believe it.
I've been actually pulled into the office, I don't know, a whole bunch.
This call is from a federal prison.
By different staff members. Is it true that you have life for marijuana? How did that happen?
Wow.
And I mean, how do you answer that? It did happen.
Wow.
But that's a sad statement that, you know, the courts are supposed to be carrying out the will of the people, and the people don't even know that you can face a life sentence for distributing marijuana. It's insane, especially now that there's four states that they have stores you can walk into and buy marijuana.
So you're in a bad prison. Does that, and so when you come across like real criminals, I mean, how would that just sit with you, knowing that you're in there and you never hurt anybody, but they have, and they're getting out before you?
I don't know. You just kind of roll with it, you know. Because one thing that I do, and I think some other people do, is I don't walk around with a, you know, sad or downtrodden or whatever. I just make the best of it. That's one thing that they can't take from me is, you know, my ability to have the best day I can. And I know a lot of people remark about that, you know, or point me out. Is I imagine they did, Gene, you know, saying, you know, hey, you're complaining about your little sentence. Look at him, and he's making the best of it. And I think that's one way of me winning against them is not letting them, you know, completely take my ability to have the best day possible. So that's what I work at every day. And the people that come and go on, you know, smaller sentences and all that, I don't let it bother me. I mean, their case is different than mine, and I just accept that.
Wow.
The sad part is you look at people that actually went into a bank and shot people and all that, and as I had a cellie that did, and he went home. And here I am.
Wow.
I suppose that's the nature of prison.
Well, we will definitely be advocating for you at our event that we're going to be at, and I'm hoping to be able to have an effect on a large amount of people. So, we'll be talking about all your sacrifices and what's going on in prison.
Thank you. And I think the more people
just the fact that you speak to us on this program, and that listeners can hear your voice and see a reasonable, good man talking who's serving a life sentence. You do so much for the cause. You're such an example for what is wrong with the system and the beauty and resiliency of the human spirit, which is what you exemplify, Greg. I just want to tell you, I give you a brotherly hug for your efforts to remain human and to influence people positively.
And I thank you, and I know you lived it also for 10 years longer than me. So, but
we're not going to be here for another 10 years. We're going to end this war before 10 years is over. I'm certain. I've got my heart set on it.
I sure hope so. And I'm more enthused than ever now that, you know, that there is actually people out there that are trying to make a difference. And I've seen several ways where they're making a difference already, just in different news coverages about mass incarceration. And more of the everybody's amazed putting things in magazines and TV and all that about the legalization of marijuana. Sooner or later, they're going to turn more and more to us, as they've started a little bit. But with your efforts, I think there's going to be a lot more public awareness, and that'll make all the difference.
Yeah, Eugene's got a little bit of some efforts we're going to talk about just after our call with you. But there are some good things going on out there. I can't wait for Gene to update us on them. But yeah, that's on one of our topics is something that might be able to help you.
Greg, I'm going to speak Fed here in the Barber Amendment that's in front of Congress now that would restore good time to the levels it was at before. And in fact, it might allow prisoners like yourself with life sentences to be eligible for parole after they've done 10 years. When we finish your conversation, we're going to speak about that to the audience.
Okay, well, the phone's going to hang up in about 1 minute. A new bill just went in last week called the SAFE Act. I think you could probably find some information about that online. But with my few seconds left, I just want to thank everybody for the support that just makes such a difference in my days, and I can't thank you all enough. Thank you.
Greg, I hope you got my opening the email, your email account. Did you get that?
Yes, I did, and I sent you a little message. We'll just make sure it works. So, but hopefully we're off
and running. I'll answer you back. When we finish the radio program, I'll answer you back. I have some ideas I want to pass on to you about your case.
Fantastic, and thank you again to everybody and everybody's efforts. Do know that I do feel them, and I do appreciate it.
All right, thank you. We love you. All right, you guys, that was Eugene Fisher serving life in prison for our plant. We've got a couple callers on hold waiting to speak, and we have some updates. So we're going to go back to Dr. Allen for a second and finish up our conversation with him. And then, Eugene, we're going to find out what you're talking about, and then we're going to do a couple callers and some updates. Hi, Dr. Allen.
Good morning.
I want to give you a chance to finish up your saying before we go to the next caller, before Craig came on.
Yeah, I'll end quickly. Basically, what you have to know is this. To be effective, to win this war, we got to stop the war by choking off its money supply. This war is run by money. And so if you want to stop this war, what you got to do is you got to attack the money source. And so what happened in my case, the drug task force was closed down because there was multiple lawsuits filed. They had to report them to the insurance company, and the insurance company raised the rates on these people for this business, and it made the business unprofitable to run. And so what happened is they closed the business down, and it metastasized and reopened under another name in Ocean Springs, the city right next door to where Pascagoula is. And then they transferred all the equipment from the task force in Pascagoula to the new task force. And so what they're doing there is they're hiding assets, because these are criminal operations. These are under the guise of the drug war. So these drug task force are hunter-killer units that go around hunting the public, and they can confiscate your property. So if you didn't smoke cannabis, I could accuse you of cannabis, and if you had property that was valuable, they would do what they need to make that thing stick. So in my case, they planted false evidence. They planted photographs of marijuana plants from an unrelated bus in WLOX and claimed that I was growing marijuana. And this was exposed in the court system that these photos were from an unrelated bus, yet the court system didn't file charges against the police that admitted this in court. So this is the drug war is a criminal operation. It doesn't have any righteousness about it at all. And these people deliberately don't want to learn anything about marijuana, because what it would do is it would cause cognitive dissonance. They couldn't understand. They couldn't do their jobs and understand this science simultaneously. They can't arrest people and understand the science of marijuana, because it would cause them cognitive dissonance. And so they don't want to be taught about marijuana, and if you try to teach them anything, it's looked at with disdain and disgust. They think that pot smokers are the most low-life people, and are any cruelty that they dish out to pot smokers is completely justified in their eyes.
Right.
So that's what I got to say. So attack the business model. So if you can get the judge to recuse himself, if you accuse the judge that's trying to try you in a trial of judicial misconduct, what happens is if you do that, then they have to go through a hearing like a trial, and
right.
they don't want to do that. So if you accuse the judge of any misconduct, they will recuse themselves rather than go through any kind of a hearing. So one of the ways to win this war is every time a new judge gets assigned, if you can accuse them of a crime, they will recuse themselves rather than go to a rather than explain themselves.
Hmm.
So the way to win this war is to attack the people that are attacking you, attack their jobs, and they will back off.
Huh.
And put as much time between the incident, if you can, the more times you can go back to court, the more chances are if you can delay the court, you can win these cases. So a lot of
cases have been won.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I apologize.
I just said it gives you more of a chance to present evidence that they don't want in their courtrooms, and it gets you more of a case built up. Otherwise, it's easy and shut down, and you're in prison next thing you know.
Well, it's a business. So what happens is the more times they have to go to court, it costs them money to do this. And so eventually it becomes unprofitable for them to prosecute a case, and the witnesses move away and all kinds of craziness happen. So the more you can postpone this trial, you can win this war by costing them money. This is a business, and if you cost the business model money, you're going to win the war or have more chances of winning the war.
Right.
Dr. Allen, I got out of prison because I had a lawsuit showing the U.S. Marshals fraudulently run a forfeited asset that the U.S. Senate, in two separate findings, found that the U.S. Marshals were involved with money laundering, working with Asian gangs, and extortion. They had collected, they ran the club that they were supposed to, it was a forfeited asset they were supposed to have sold. They ran it for 7 years, and they collected over $180 million. When I brought the lawsuit for $10 million against them, one judge in Washington, D.C. found I had merit, and the government wasn't able to answer, and sent it back to my district court because they said they didn't have jurisdiction. As we approached trial, and therefore they had it established on the calendar, we had to go to trial. And I asked for discovery, of course. And in asking for discovery, the government's response was, Fisher can't be serious. There are over 500,000 documents involved in what he's saying. And, of course, my lawyer said, who was working pro bono for me, he said, of course he wants those documents, and you'll have to disclose them. And it's just like you just said. I hit him at the money level. When they saw that they had a potential of losing $10 million, and that they had a potential of being found guilty of criminal activities, they desisted, and within 1 week of the point when we were supposed to get discovery, I was released.
And that's exactly right. This
is
a business. It doesn't have anything to do with justice or law. It's a business. So
precisely.
God bless you for helping on this, and thank you, Kristen, for running the show.
Thank you, Dr. Allen.
We will win this show. We will win this war with programs like this, and encouraging people just to write to a prisoner. If you could just please write a letter to a prisoner. These people are in jail and they have no hope, and just a little letter. And I want to thank Stephanie Landa. Stephanie Landa wrote me when I was in prison, and I can't tell you how important that was to me to get mail from somebody outside that knew the science and knew what they were doing was wrong. And it made me feel good because they isolated me.
Stephanie is a good friend also, Dr. Allen, and I know what you're saying. I just want to say this too. Both Christian and I look forward to being with you on this coming board of directors meeting when I think we'll have some significant things we'll be talking about.
All right. Well, you guys, I'm gonna put Stephanie on the phone. Actually, I have a quick question for her, and I know she got to say hi to you too. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for calling in today.
Hi. How is everybody doing?
Hey, Stephanie.
Good. How are you?
So, of course, I agree with every single thing. Tom and I were just talking about it this morning, how this is a business. When we first got into the pot world, we were thinking, oh, this is fun. Oh, let's do this. This is fun. We get to hang out with all our friends, and we get to heal ourselves, and this is a good thing. And then as it grew and we decided to become public and tell the government about us and about everyone, it became a business too. So mm-hmm. now it's a business, and now the government's in business, and now the two businesses are fighting for money, for the love
right.
of money. Like, I'm kind of a little bit disappointed in both sides, to tell you the truth. Like, I thought I was going to die thinking, pot's wonderful, it's going to free my friends. And now it's like, as soon as we told the government what we wanted to do with medical, they put us in prison. I know some people went before, but there's a lot of people that are in prison right now that thought it was medical. Like me.
Yeah.
So it's all, and Dr. Allen, thank you so much. David, I am so honored to be your friend. I just,
you saved my life. This woman saved my life, and I want everybody to understand how important Stephanie Landa is to this movement. And,
I know. I got tears in my eyes.
And I had none.
Well.
So thank you.
Well, I
thank
still
you.
Have hope because the world could change tomorrow.
Well,
I
you
mean,
guys,
it could. It could.
You guys, I have a question for you, Stephanie.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to ask you. Like, I've been thinking, like, what if I went to prison? How on earth would I survive? And I just want to know, I'd probably know, but do they let you have curling irons and hair dryers in prison?
Yes.
They do?
Yes. Well, there's actually, there's actually, like, a barbershop thing, and you, like, wait in line for everything you wait in line for. There's nothing you don't wait in line for, like a long, 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 long line. And so you wait in line for that, too, and then somebody, that's their job to, like,
do
the barber
stuff. Oh, you can't
cut
your own hair.
Oh, yeah, you can. You could just crowd yourself in there and do it yourself. But, it's only open sometimes. And, you know, it's built in torture, but I think, I don't know if they let the guys have curling irons.
No.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, this is what they do. Now, Tom just reminded me. If you want a curling iron or a dryer or a scissor to cut your hair or a nail clipper, they keep track of those things by writing it down, signing it out, like it's a machine gun, Tom says. It's like they really keep track of those type of sign outs, you know, and should you not bring it back, you are in big, big trouble. Everything you're in trouble for. Prison is a horrible place, especially for people that for anybody, actually. For anybody. It's horrible.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So that was your big question, really?
Yeah,
I'm
I was
kill
just wondering,
you.
Like, how do you curl your hair? Like, I was just thinking of the things that you have to give up, and one of the things that I would not want to sacrifice.
Well, the women's prison, you didn't even, like, one of the girls was making commissary by pedicures and manicures. Like, most of the women in there had a real job when they were out here. And
right.
So they all do things that they don't have money in there, so they sell whatever they do to me, who did have money.
Wow.
Like, does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. My dad had money in prison, and he would pay the inmates to scrub down his cell and stuff like that so that he...
Right,
had,
do your laundry.
Yeah,
do your, all kinds of stuff that... You know, that's why it's important to have commissary, so that you can at least be a little bit civilized. You know,
right,
like
right.
have some of the...
Shouldn't have to live without commentary.
And,
oh, yeah, definitely.
I just
had time to talk about that.
Okay, and I was just about to say, Dr. Dina and Amy and Sherry are all working on this really hard. The website, I'm going to tell you what the website is, but it's not up yet. But a page will be up by the time Chalice, which is 7, 10, and 11. And we're going to come out at Chalice. We're making a huge banner, and we're going to have the prisoners on it and Dr. Dina's challenge. And the people are asking me about it all the time.
What is it?
The challenge is to adopt a prisoner, to adopt a prisoner, and we're going to make T-shirts for you with the prisoner's face on it. And it's like we're going to, like, make it so that it's really easy. Just push a button. We're going to ask the dispensaries and the extract companies to do so much every quarter. And that's how much it's going to cost to adopt a prisoner. And we'll keep you posted. They'll write you letters. We'll make sure we match you up with somebody really great. And we're going to start with the lifers, of course. And then we'll probably get to everybody. That's the way it looks like, because a lot of people are really interested. People just want to do something good and be recognized for that something good they are doing. Plus, we are a tax write-off, and it's really hard to get tax deductions when you're a dispensary. You can't take your rent off. You can't take a lot of stuff off. So this is a tax deduction. So it sounds like it's going to really take off. We were in Malibu yesterday, like, having a powwow about it. I posted some pictures of the signs at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And we take our signs everywhere. I'm about ready to make 100 signs so that I can start giving them away. And then it's like people won't make them, but they'll accept them. And maybe they'll take them with them to a party they're going to. You know, people want to do the right thing. I know they do. It's just a matter of letting them help. You know, the people that I talk to, they want to help, especially since Dr. Dina's involved. And she's just somebody that wants to do good things, and everybody knows that she wants to do good things. So we're on the way to commissary
heaven. If somebody wants to help prisoners do your program, how do they get in touch with you or the program to do that?
Of course, they can always call my cell, 818-652-7891. The website is going to be, like, within a month, it's up, but there's nothing there. It's adoptaprisoner.com.
Cool. So everybody check it out. We don't need our prisoners struggling in prison. They deserve all the benefits that we have out in our real life and more, because there are heroes who haven't been taken by our government or, you know, turned into slaves, basically. So help them out.
Slaves.
And remind everybody who are listening, they make less than 20 cents an hour. Cannot afford anything.
We were talking about... Stephanie, we were talking about the isolation of prison. That's the main thing that occurs in prison. And I just wanted to, Dr. Allen, Craig, myself, and of course you all have experienced it, and we know what it is to be isolated from everybody, so that family and friends and people that you're getting to know, and money passed to you for commissary, emails received, letters received, all of those things help you remain a sane human being while you're in prison. And that's what the public must know.
And I want to say one more thing. Anyone can send anyone, like, you know, I don't know how much it is, but it's not much, a subscription to anything. And especially a newspaper. If you can afford to give somebody a subscription to a newspaper, they are king in prison. It's like you have today's newspaper. It might be tomorrow, but you might get it yesterday. Or, you know, you might be a day late.
Go
ahead.
when my dad was struggling, he got the newspaper, and the guard was extra nice to my dad because my dad would share the newspaper with the guard while the guard was on duty. So the newspaper does get you some special privileges sometimes.
And any of our federal prisoners can receive 5 paperback books or 5 magazines. I'm sure everyone has 5 magazines lying around that they could send in, because first of all, the guards hate that they get so much mail, but they notice them and they realize, oh my God, so many people are taking care of them. They must be okay.
Right.
That's an important factor.
I think on the newspapers and magazines, at least in the level of prisons I was in, at the end, they stopped that you have to get them directly from the publisher, from the magazine or newspaper people.
Are you sure? Because I just heard that you can still do it. I mean,
the prisons I was in, Stephanie.
Well, maybe
end,
you were at maximum security.
The prisons,
I know the camps can get it. And a lot of our boys are in camps, and girls.
This is Dr. Allen. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you, Dr. Allen.
I'm sorry. I wanted to interject. When I was in prison, they did a special thing. First off, my prison, you could only receive magazines and stuff directly from the publishers. What happened in my prison, there was a lot of people that used to mail stuff to me. Yeah. I could get stuff directly from the publisher, but not from somebody that sent it to me on the outside. Because you can soak the paper in amphetamines and stuff, apparently. I don't know. That's what they say. Anyway, what happened to me was really interesting. I used to get a bunch of mail from Sue Cologne, and she would mail a bunch of Internet stuff, and I'd sometimes get 10, 20 pages of Internet stuff. And what they do is they photocopy everything that comes in the mail. They open it, and they say they're checking for contraband, but what they really do is they copy everything. And so the guys who were in the mail room in my prison, they had to copy all this stuff. And so what they did is they made a special rule while I was in prison that you could only receive 2 pieces of email or from anything from the Internet, 2 pages. And so what happened was, another friend of mine would sometimes mail me 10 letters with 2 pages in.
Yay.
In each one. But this really kind of made it hard on me, because the guards at mail call, they had to call out your name, the prisoner's name. And then they would make you walk up and get the piece of mail, and then you walk back and they would call another name. So they would do this. And they would have to call me up 10 times or something a night. And so it was, like, really embarrassing, and they did it on purpose just to kind of mess with me.
So I want to thank everyone that wrote to me, because my mail room in federal prison would take all my mail, because there was so much, 50 letters a day, and put it all in a rubber band. And then they would just say, can't you get your own mailbox? I mean, like, so many people wrote to me. Yeah,
God bless you. I'm glad you. I had the opposite experience. You and only like 2 other people wrote to me in prison. That was the only letters I received.
Oh. Oh my God! I'm gonna go like have the best day ever.
God bless
you. Well,
you guys, we gotta
move on. We've got a whole bunch of callers and some other topics to talk about. But
okay,
I love you guys.
Bye.
Thank you for all your
and the drug war.
And our war.
Thank you both for calling in.
Thank you. Bye-bye. POWs, I love you guys. That's one thing I'm blessed. My dad's death has put me out is in touch with all you good people. I'm proud of my dad for that.
Kristen, it's so good to hear people talk like David Allen just talked and Stephanie Landa just talked about actual experiences and things in prison, so that our listeners can understand what this other world, this world of incarceration, is all about. And it really is an evil, horrible thing. It really is.
It is. It is. Well, what's going on in Congress, this bill that you're talking about that might help get people home sooner?
Yeah. It was brought to my attention by Mark Varka of FedCure. He's the CEO of the head of FedCure, which is another organization like ours, except they work at the legislative side. I'm talking to Mark. Hopefully we can work together, the Human Solution International and FedCure, at a joint program, supporting each other in their programs. But basically, one of the things they've got in front of Congress is a bill called the Barber Amendment. Barber, like hair barber, B-A-R-B-E-R, Barber Amendment.
Right.
And it would reintroduce good time. In 1989, they eliminated parole in the federal system. Most states followed through and did the same. And they eliminated the good time you could accumulate. It used to be you could get up to one-third of your sentence on a federal basis eliminated through what they call good time credit, which was just simply days off your sentence. And you'd get the time off if you didn't have any infractions of rules or anything else. But then in 1989, it was changed to 47 days a year.
Wow.
Which is about 15%. So it went down, it went in half. The Barber Amendment would bring it back to over 147 days instead of just 47 of good time allowed. And hopefully it would allow life prisoners to be eligible for parole, although that's more questionable whether that could get reinstated, because that would involve a lot of new parole officers and so on being added to the roles. But the good time is would pass directly with this Barber Amendment. And as we work, get our relationship cemented in with FedCure, we hope we'll be able to bring this and out to our listeners, out to our membership, out to the public in general to support this bill, because it could mean a significant, it could increase, triple the amount of good time people receive, so that if you had a 10-year sentence, rather than have 1.5 years cut off for good time, it would allow you to cut off from 3 to 4 years of your sentence. So there'd be people who are in prison now, and many of them marijuana prisoners, who would directly benefit from it, and many would get released immediately.
Wow, that's amazing. Is there any place could we go to FedCure's website and to learn more?
Yes. I hesitated about mentioning it, but because until we can get a firm agreement with FedCure and Mark Varka. I know Mark, by the way, go back 30 years. I know him and his father from 30 years ago.
Cool.
We would, but if you go to the computer, look up Barber Amendment under the U.S. government congressional website, and you'll see the particulars on it.
Cool. I hope our listeners do that and figure out, do it and see what they can do to support that, or if you want to get into it and see, it may help some of our people.
I hope, Christian, excuse me, I just want to leave one last thought. I hope we can cement this relationship, because FedCure actually has a petition, an online petition going, that would greatly help us get the amendment passed. So that would be one of the things we'd be hooking up with them for.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to meet FedCure. They seem like an awesome group. I'm going to go through a couple news updates, and we're going to take a couple callers. First of all, I want to give an update on Bill Levine, who was a guest that we had on our show the week before last, who is starting up a cannabis church, the first cannabis church. And he's from the same state that Craig Cecil's in. And the warning from Marion County Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department says, the city's top enforcement, I'm just going to read this from the website. The city's top law enforcement officials put a new first church of cannabis on Notice Friday. Anyone who smokes marijuana at the inaugural service next week will face criminal charges. The warning from Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry and Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department Chief Rick Height changes nothing, said Bill Levine, the church's founder, who pledged to move forward with the plans for service at noon Wednesday where marijuana will be smoked. And then Bill Levine says they haven't raised the stakes. These have been the stakes the whole time. In fact, an arrest or rest will spur the court fight that looks like the legal battle that has been expected by nearly everyone, including Curry and Height, who watched over the story in the controversial church unfold in the week since Governor Pence signed the Indiana's new Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So we're watching this story. Nobody should go to jail for a plant, especially these nice churchgoers. This is right here in the same state. So we'll have more of an update next week. First is just right around the corner. So stay tuned for that. I also want to, for some of our news topics this morning, I want to thank Lori Baker for coming onto our call on Saturday for your recertification, and congratulate you on your recertification to help make your chapter official. For anybody else who would like to help make your chapter official, please call us. It's not that your chapter is not official, it's just that we just have to recertify you. So that's what's going on. And I have an update from Teresa, who's one of our chapter coordinators in Vegas. She's also doing some community service for us on a charge. And I just want to update everybody. Having problems doing that community service because Nevada, we've had a few situations in Nevada. Some of the judges has allowed some of our defendants to do community service through the Human Solutions because we're now nonprofit 501c3. And they weren't going to allow her. And now they've changed their mind. They are going to allow it. In fact, she's finished the paperwork to submit for their chapter to be used as a community service provider. So they'll be able to be referred to our Vegas chapter to actually do community service. So we took a bad situation when they weren't going to allow it, and now the courts are going to allow it, and now they're actually going to be a place where people can officially do community service there. So congratulations, Teresa. Don't you think that's good news, Eugene?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
That's a very big accomplishment. So I want to bring Danielle on the call here. I think that's all of my updates for today, actually. But I want to bring Danielle on the call so she can update us about Shauna Banda. We don't have any new news, but I think we could talk about a little bit about what is going on with her. Danielle, are you there?
I am. Hi, how are you guys doing today?
We're good.
Great.
Today.
How are you?
Good, thanks. I'm actually on my way to an event up in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. So, Shauna Banda, as far as I know, we don't have any new updates, you know, other than what happened last week, which I think we had discussed, where she had, you know, gone and turned herself in and got out immediately on bond. And she's, I think, right now just at a waiting point. But I do not have any new updates for Shauna. Her GoFundMe is well over $45,000 now, which has been beautiful to watch grow. But other than that, with the gag order in place, you know, there probably won't be many updates as far as the family side of things go and the custody of her son. But as far as her personal case goes, be definitely watching for that and watching for news from Sarah Swain, her attorney, as to when and where that will be taking place. So that's really
cool.
All I have on Shauna.
Cool. I just wanted to make sure we keep her situation alive so people realize that there's still a little boy out there who doesn't have his mother and still has not been able to see. Have they been able to see each other, do you know?
No, I am not sure. Like I said, with the gag order in place, they are not allowed to talk about things like that with the general public or any media. So
okay.
I'm not sure. I don't believe so from the most recent social media posts. I think that she'll probably be and bring contacts when she does see them, but I'm not sure if that's even allowed. Like I said, I'm pretty sure with the gag order she won't be able to make any of that public, unfortunately.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to discuss? Danielle is one of our listeners. She's one of our executive directors and works hard every single day implementing human solution stuff into the world.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot going on right now. You know, a lot of things taking place with our training of the chapters across the nation. That's been exciting to have people calling in and getting their chapters certified and ready for the next phase. We got a lot of changes on the horizon, and they're all positive changes that we're all looking forward to. And, yeah, just stay tuned and get trained. Hop online. Go to www.thsincl.org. Go to Forms Operations Manual and sign up for your training. I urge everyone listening, whether you're a chapter coordinator or just a general member even, call in and speak with the executive committee and find out, you know, all the ins and outs of the human solution and what we're all about, and get any questions you may have answered. And and then we're ready to move on, like I said, and start getting all of our different chapters and all the various states across the nation active and out there supporting defendants and prisoners and participating in fundraising and education about jury nullification and that type of stuff. And, yeah, we're just excited about the future. That's about it.
All right. Well, thank you, Danielle, for joining us this morning. Have a good morning.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Christian, I'd just like to make a point, if I could. It's people like Danielle and yourself. It's the women of the movement. I've said this before. I want to say it again. It's the women of the movement that make this so significant. I've never seen such a hard-working group of ladies, of people. They happen to be ladies. as I've seen in the human solution. When I went to prison at first, Christian, there wasn't anybody supporting us, any organization supporting us. There was some support by people, although there was a negative connotation about everything about marijuana back then. And now we've got this, our organization, and there are public organizations out there doing things. And again, the people, I wish the guys were more supportive as the women are of this thing. You ladies, right, make this happen, and the prohibition will be repealed because of efforts like you're making.
Right. Well, thank you, Gene. We're doing our very, very, very best. I'm going to play a calendar from Danielle that she did for us today for our prisoners and our defendants. Check it out.
The Human Solution International Calendar strives to keep you up to date on cannabis court proceedings and THSI meetings and events taking place across the nation each and every week. THSI is currently filling our executive director's calendar with chapter training. We have already certified a handful of chapters and are now open for more appointments. This is a chance to speak directly with the THSI Executive Board about any questions you may have about running an offensive chapter. Please visit www.thsintl.org and go to Forms Operations Manual to schedule your appointment today. We look forward to hearing from you all. Upcoming court dates for this week of June 28th are tomorrow, Monday, June 29th at 8:15 a.m., Rick and LaPrille definitely need bodies and ribbons in the courtroom. It's a hearing that has been set over from previous dates. Motions and treadle readiness is on the agenda. Please come show support and let the judge know how the community feels. Again, this is tomorrow, Monday, June 29th at 8:15 a.m. at the Pomona Courthouse at 400 Civic Center Place, Department N5 in Pomona, California, 91766. Also on Monday, June 29th, the Alcorn settlement hearing, where nothing was settled from back on the 15th, has a new date. They ask that you arrive at 9:30 a.m. at the Shasta Superior Court at 1500 Court Street in Redding, California. Again, that's tomorrow, Monday, June 29th at 9:30 a.m. Also, tomorrow, Monday, June 29th at 3 p.m., Stenhouse Motions Hearing is taking place at the Tehama County Courthouse located at 445 Pine Street in Red Bluff, California. They're asking for supporters. July 2nd at 8:30 a.m., Dan Levine will have his bail reduction hearing. He will remain in the Butte County Jail until this hearing. Please arrive at the Butte County Superior Courthouse located at 1 Court Street in Oroville, California at 8:30 a.m. on July 2nd. That concludes our Human Solution calendar for the week of June 28th. We hope that you will use the calendar effectively to get court dates in your area on there. You can do that by visiting www.chsintl.org calendar and add an event. Or you can always call 951-934-0055 and leave a message with your details, and we can put it up on the calendar for you. You can also email calendar@thsintl.org for assistance from Human Solutions staff. Thank you for joining us for THSI Radio, because no one should go to jail for a plant.
That was our beautiful Danielle Vitello Bryan with your calendar update. Guys, I'm going to go to Mike Harris. He is one of our media team members. He does all kinds of stuff for us, and he provides the news right to the front lines for you guys to know. Anyway, he has another addition to add to Shauna's update that might be interesting for everybody to know. Hi, Mike. How are you this morning?
I am fine, Kristen, and yourself and Eugene. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, further updates on Shauna Banda. This week, former presidential candidate and congressman from Texas, Ron Paul, father of congressional Senator Rand Paul, released a YouTube video in full support of Shauna Banda. He's dedicated the entire Liberty Report to Shauna Banda. And Shauna, being an avid libertarian, was really lifted her spirits. And it also stimulated her GoFundMe page, which is now currently $48,585, and it's going strong. Out there in the blogosphere, a blog show, Russ Belville, who has the 420 radio show, is also a former Normal executive, dedicated his entire 4 o'clock hour to Shauna Banda and is encouraging people to participate. So she is getting a lot of support. Also, in the United Kingdom, they're following her story very closely. Both the Clear Network and Dark City News have featured her, and this week Sarah Swain was on Dark City News, and the people in the UK are very interested in what's going on in the United States regarding Shauna.
Nice. Well, thank you, Mike, for keeping up with that and for sharing it with our listeners. You being a voice for Shauna, and that is amazing. You and Danielle have done a lot. And Mindy and Beck, our whole media team, has just done so much to help Shauna try to get her story out there. And every little second of your guys' time and energy is worth it. And thank you. I know she appreciates
you're welcome.
It.
Yeah,
is there any other? Is there any other interesting news you'd like to share with us today, Mike?
Well, also that the executive, I'm not sure exactly what his title is, but he runs Normal. Keith Stroop wrote a very very nice article about supporting Shauna as well. So that just about every activist organization, I think, is aware of what's going on with her. And, you know, this possibly could be, because of the national interest in it, that it could be a tipping point. In how states are looking at their cannabis laws and what people really feel about them.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Mike. Is there any other news you want to share with us? Or?
But that's it for the day, and everybody and all the listeners have a nice Sunday afternoon.
Okay, thank you, Mike. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, listeners. Next, we are going to do a Northern California update from Mr. Tom Corby himself. Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I want to thank all the folks on the front line, and we're going to be going up, hopefully, for Trevor Alcorn's his settlement rule tomorrow up in Shasta Ready, and then we'll be going for the 10 houses at 3 p.m., and we hope to get plenty of court support, both Alcorn and the 10 houses. Will not plea bargain, and they're taking them on. The Sand Houses have a lawsuit going against Haven County, taking their property.
Oh.
And they've offered the property back. Not enough for the Sand Houses. We're going to take them on the truck and come for court support tomorrow. I want to thank everybody for a great show, and we also have, of course, Dan Levine the next day, Tuesday. Let's see, next Tuesday, July 2nd, Danny's still in jail. He'll have a bail reduction hearing at 8:30 on July 2nd, and we hope to be there for Danny. I want to thank you all. And let's end prohibition in 2016. Don't forget to breathe. Thank you all.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Gene.
All right, you guys, I'm going to go for a see if Frederica Ballard from Las Vegas has a Vegas update. Hi, Frederica. How are you doing today? Frederica, are you there? Frederica? If you have your phone on mute, you have to take it off mute. All right. Well, that is it for callers. Eugene, is there anything else you'd like to add to the show before we go into our closing? Looks like we're going to end the show about 20 minutes
no.
early today.
No.
No?
Okay. I think it was a great show. I'm glad we could have the guest speakers we had, Craig Cecil, as usual, Dr. David Allen, it was wonderful to have him, Stephanie Landa. It was just great having, and of course, Danielle and yourself. The audience appreciates it. Thank you.
Well, everyone, I just want to, one more thing is just to remind everybody, I do want to say, hey, on Tuesday the 30th, we'll be at the Rock Concert trying to educate people. Me and McJay will be there along with, I heard rumors that Jared Alloway is going to be there as well, and he's going to be wearing his marijuana safer than alcohol t-shirt. So we just want to say, no one should go to jail for a plant. And if you can get out there at the Gorge of George at 1 o'clock on Tuesday and help us have an effect on 30,000 people, please join us. We're really excited about it. If you don't have time to make it to that event, but you still want to help, you can reach us by calling our hotline number at 951-934-0055. You can leave us a message and just tell us how you want to help end prohibition, and we'll find a place just for you. Or you can visit our website at www.thsintl.org. First, before I say goodbye, I want everybody to hear this exciting message from Mr. Tommy Chong, who is one of our members. Hold on, I don't see his message on here. Da-da-da-da. Okay, here we are. Check out Tommy Chong. Let's see what he has to say about the human solution.
Tommy Chong, just telling everybody, the Human Solution International is no one should go to jail for a plant.
And you guys heard it right from Tommy Chong. But no one should go to jail for a plant. And you're about to hear it from Willie Nelson in a second, too, so stay tuned. But first, I want to say that today is Sunday, and so we want to thank all of our people, because it's a special day today, for helping us with the Human Solution. especially those that help bring this news news publication to you, and that's our media team, CHSINTL.org media team. Like I said, if you guys are want to write for that media team or be part of it, go to our website, again, CHSINTL.org, and tell us you want to help end the war. You can help us by even educating people about jury nullification, which is really important. That's your right to say not guilty to bad crimes, not just marijuana crimes, but any crime that could put you in prison for not being violent. You have a power to nullify laws after they're voted for, and that's through jury duty. And that is your job as a juror that the government does not want you to know, and that's your power to vote against bad laws right there and keep people from prison. So it's Sunday, and we want to honor all of our fallen heroes and those that are in prison for our plant. So we want to say we need to end the war right now so our people who are spending life sentences in prison don't have to die there like my father did, shackled to a hospital bed. I personally had to take him off life support because our plant is federally illegal, and that's what it comes down to. It comes down to Stacey Tice's Uncle Gary being shot down, and his wife being shot down over 20 times. Gary died because of that, by the federal government, who says that our plant is federally illegal. That's why we need to end the war so nobody else dies. I also want to say rest in peace to Jack Carer, who taught us so much about our plant that he wrote a book and left it behind for us all to read. In his book, he talks about everything you need to know about prohibition and why it exists. Jack Carer, I heard from one of our chapter coordinators, Joy Graves, who's a good friend with Jack Carer, that he would have still probably be alive today had Rick Simpson oil been invented before he passed. But I also want to say rest in peace to Peter McWilliams, who stood for a lot of motivating, and he left us behind some powerful motivational books. He was a big advocate for our plant, and he left us things to stay focused, and I urge everybody to read his books. I want to say rest in peace to Kanan Smith and Curtis Cecil, and two little children who passed away in our war, Cassie Hyde and Spencer. And so I want to say let's end prohibition today so that our prisoners can get out, our children can get the medicine, and all of our fallen heroes for joining THSI Radio, because nobody should ever, ever go to jail for a plant. Bye, Eugene. I hope you have a good day today.
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you, and check out what Willie Nelson has to say.
Hi, I'm Willie Nelson, and the Willie Nelson Tea Pot Party and I endorse the Human Solution, supporting cannabis prisoners because no one should go to jail for a plant.
Little things I should have said and done. You were always on.